and welcome to Run the Table. I'm your host, Bryce Tinson-Obert. How we doing?
Doing very good.
So it's been a little bit since it feels like this is the common theme of this semester with classes and whatnot. It feels like there's, you know, a bigger pause than we'd like in between episodes. Yep. But we have some free time. And, you know, it's a pretty good time to talk about some sports. We just had both national championship games. We had UConn beating San Diego State. We had LSU beating Iowa. And then we have the start of the MLB season. So this episode, we've got our MLB predictions, but that'll be towards the end of the show. First, we're going to start with talking about LSU-Iowa and also talking about UConn-San Diego State. I'm going to start with, I think, the thing you're most fired up about, as is everybody on the internet, it seems like. Yep. So LSU beats Iowa 102-85. You know, I mean, that's an insane score, all things considered. Kind of makes me feel like, you know, even though they play the same amount of time as the men's, I just feel like quarters works better. Right. I don't know why. But that's beside the point. So LSU wins the game by 15 points. Towards the end of the game with like 15, I think it was 15 seconds left, 10 seconds left. Angel Reese LSU's going back on the defensive side of the court after hitting two free throws. If the game wasn't already iced, it was iced. And Angel Reese does the "you can't see me," right?
Right.
And then she follows Caitlin Clark around doing that, pointing to her finger, you know, ring type stuff. And then you get on Twitter and it's this argument between classless or, you know, is that trash talk? Is that just your run-of-the-mill trash talk? Is it a race thing? Is it a gender thing? And I know we've talked about it extensively, but I want to know your thoughts on the matter.
I am a huge believer in sportsmanship and class and all of sports. I don't believe that that's off the board due to competition. You can say, oh, well, you've never played, you know, competitive sports past high school, and that's true, and that's fine. But I was just always taught that by people who did play sports past, you know, high school and everything like that, who, you know, actually have experience playing at a very high level. And it always was class and, you know, in competition. And so when I saw that, like, if for me to say that that was anything but, you know, very unsportsmanlike from Angel Reese would be just completely inconsistent. And there's no reason for me to be. Not in a, you know, and I get how people can, you know, say that people on the internet went too far, and classless piece of shit was, you know, by Dave Portnoy. It was a step too far.
Dave always takes it a step too far.
20-year-old kid. But, you know, if you're telling me, hey, would you have rather, you know, Angel Reese go back to her sideline, you know, go celebrate with her teammates, or do what she did, which is get right up in Caitlin Clark's face, try and, you know, follow her around, try and get up right up in her face and celebrate, I would say I'd rather to the first, you know, I'd rather celebrate with her teammates out of good sportsmanship. And, you know, Caitlin Clark says she shouldn't be criticized and all that's good and well. And, you know, a lot of people will say, hey, this is high level competition, let them do whatever they want. Absolutely, they can do whatever they want. But if the question is, you know, was it sportsmanlike? Was it classy? Absolutely, it wasn't. We all know that, you know, and there are people on the internet who are, shut up, you know, hey, blah, 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 blah. I'm going to send a photo to you of the two comparing. First off, they both weren't the photo that is going viral of Caitlin Clark doing the, you know, you can't see me to the opponent and Angel Reese doing the same thing. They weren't the same thing, obviously. But also, like, Caitlin Clark's thing can totally be, you know, chalked up to, yeah, absolutely, that you can call that classless. I wasn't watching the game, you know, so that's why we didn't talk about it. We didn't talk about it at the time. It was like the Elite Eight or something like that. And I would have probably said, hey, you know what? You know, you don't have to trash talk. You don't have to love it. I didn't necessarily love it from Caitlin Clark. I certainly didn't love it from Angel Reese because I thought it was a step more towards unsportsmanlike. It really has nothing to do with race. I think all of Larry Bird's antics back in the day, a lot of Larry Bird's antics back in the day were classless.
Yeah, Larry Bird wasn't exactly the nicest, nicest, like, fellow.
It is what it is. But, you know, I don't want to get into a spot where we're allowed to say some things about some people and some things about others, specifically because of their race. I think that's odd to me. And, you know, it would be very inconsistent of me to say anything but, you know, this was unsportsmanlike. Yep. This was not the right thing to do. Who cares? You know, if you had no problem with it, that's fine. Personally, I wouldn't have, you know, I would have rather her not, you know, get all up in Caitlin Clark's face. It's just my opinion, but, you know, and that's it. So, you know, and Hell, I've said that, you know, Ryan Day keeping his stars in there up 38 was, you know, classless. So obviously if I didn't say this was classless, this would be, you know, a bad look for my brand. And I'm not willing to do that.
It's all about the brand, right? Right,
exactly. Right. So, yes, I thought it was unsportsmanlike, you know. Who cares about sportsmanship, though? So,
Where I fall on this, I don't want to ride the fence, you know, because I do enjoy the occasional trash talk. I do enjoy the taunting, as long as it's, you know, not with malicious intent. One and two, it's not over the top. And to me, given the context that Angel Reese did it at the free throw line, like 10 seconds before. It felt like it was unnecessary to follow Caitlin Clark around and just try and get her attention, essentially, when the rest of her team is down on the other end celebrating. To me, that seems like she is more focused on a certain player on the other team rather than actually winning the national championship. For me, I wouldn't give a shit what's happening on the other team. We just won the national championship. I really do not care. So... And getting this weird debate on Twitter, it's like, well, she was doing the same thing as Caitlin Clark, like you mentioned. It's like, it's not the same thing. Caitlin Clark did it while she was going to her bench. It was like two waves in front of her face, and then she was gone. Like, Angel Reese was literally like this for 10 seconds.
Yep.
It's like, what are we doing at that point? And you can, my favorite part of that video is that as she's falling her, as Reese is falling Clark, one of her teammates just gritties past.
Right.
Like, on the screen, it's like, why aren't you doing that? Right? Like, go celebrate with your team. And I also just thought, specifically from Reese, I just thought it was weird energy from her. She seemed to make that game a lot more about the fact that it was Caitlin Clark than the actual game. The one quote I keep going back to is that Caitlin Clark was not guarding South Carolina at the three-point line, or one of their specific players. She couldn't shoot the ball. She was a terrible three-point shooter. And so Angel Reese, I don't think she was even asked a question about it. She might have been. Actually, I think the reporter asked, you know, when you see something like that, what do you think? And she's like, I take that as disrespect. It's like, it's not even happening to you. It's like, what do you mean? And Caitlin Clark gets on, I think a couple days later, and says, yeah, we're going to guard LSU a different way because they're not the same team. Mm-hmm. And then after the game, all LSU could talk about was Caitlin Clark. And, you know, and maybe it's because Caitlin Clark was the topic of discussion for the entire tournament, but it just felt weird. Like, you won the national championship game to be spending all of that time. Like, it was on an IG live.
Yep.
that she was doing. It just felt weird. You know, like what Antoine Winfield did to Tyreek Hill in the Super Bowl. You know, I'm okay with that. Would I have done that on the football field? No, I wasn't a notorious taunter, though. I didn't trash talk. That wasn't what I did. But like, it was quick, and then he went to his sideline. But like, when it's just a constant thing, and it's like you're just trying to be an antagonizer, that's when I have an issue with it. And you know. The game happened. It's over. It happened on Sunday. We're now, it's Tuesday when we're filming. This will be Wednesday when it's posted. I think it's about done. Like, the discourse should be over with it. Now, one of the things I actually wanted to talk about with the actual game and the tournament itself is, and this is a bigger thing for me personally, one of my issues with championship games or awards is that we tend to just give them to the winners. In my opinion, Caitlin Clark was the most outstanding player of the tournament. Angel Reese won it. It's not to take away from what she did. I think she averaged a double-double, but Caitlin Clark did things we hadn't seen in any, you know, women's men's tournament before. I just felt like personally that she deserved the most outstanding player because she was. But we do this thing where we give those awards to the winning team. I have an issue with it in the Super Bowl, and I think we talked about it after the Super Bowl. I said Jalen Hurts should have won the MVP. He was the best player on that field. They didn't win. Doesn't matter. He was still the best player on the field. And, you know, that's like when LeBron James in, what was it, 2015, yeah, when Iguodala won it. I think LeBron James should have won it. Like, he was the best player on the court during that series. And the fact that it went to six games was because of LeBron's greatness. I think that we have to become more open as a sports society that, hey, you don't have to win. You don't have to be on the winning team in order to get this, you know, MVP award or most outstanding player award. It should go to the most outstanding player. And if it happens to be on the winning team, fine, right? They deserve it. But if it also happens to not be on the winning team, I just don't see how you can make the argument that Andre Iguodala was better than LeBron James in that series, or Patrick Mahomes. Patrick Mahomes wasn't even the best player on his team. No. Like, so
for 170 yards.
Exactly. So that's where, you know, that's where I really wanted to talk about. I didn't really care so much about the whole taunting thing, but we had to talk about it considering it was such a big thing.
I'll say this too. Caitlin Clark came out and she was like, Andrew Reese doesn't deserve any criticism, blah, 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 blah. I forget what else she said, whatever. But, and then, you know, like people were like, oh, she doesn't need defending, anything like that. It's like, I'm not defending her. You know what I mean? Yeah. I'm just literally talking about Angel Reese. And when the question is, you know, what was your opinion about what she did? I thought it was unsportsmanlike. It's that simple. It isn't really, you know, it's just a matter of opinion rather than, oh, well, Caitlin Clark needs my help. She didn't need anybody's help. But that's just the opinion of it. Like, Michael Crabtree didn't need anybody's help when Richard Sherman was, you know, talking a bunch of shit post-game. But everybody criticized Richard Sherman. Yeah. It wasn't a matter of defending, you know, Michael Crabtree. It was a matter of, hey, look at how much of an idiot this guy Richard Sherman is. You know, different things, obviously. But that's just how it was. People weren't really defending Michael Crabtree. I didn't have an opinion on
it. Was just
I had opinion on, you know, exactly. Richard Sherman being an idiot post game. That's what I did. But it is what it is. So,
and then another big thing. And you know what the great thing about all this is, you know, this goes back to the, you know, any publicity is great publicity. English tough sometimes, because there's another thing that's going on is that Joe Biden wants to invite both LSU and Iowa to the White House. It's usually accustomed to have the winner. Joe Biden wants to invite Iowa as well, who lost in the championship game. And this has created more discourse on Twitter, which for the game itself is fantastic. They had I can't remember the exact number, but this was the most viewed women's national championship game, and it wasn't even close. I mean, when you look at the numbers from this year to last year, the game's going in the right direction. And I think people are starting to realize that, hey, you know, there are players. And do I think that a lot of that is because of Caitlin Clark? Yeah, I think that, you know, you've got to have a player like that, right? For the NBA, they struggled until Magic and Larry, right? And then once the 80s happened, it was like something clicked, right? It was a factor of things, but you have two superstars that are kind of like the face of basketball. I think that once Caitlin Clark, you know, eventually goes to the WNBA, we've had, you know, Sabrina Ionescu as well. But Paige, I think, Buchers. That Caitlin Clark, what?
Paige Buchers.
Yep, Paige Buchers. But she's still in college, isn't she?
Oh, I don't know. Probably.
But I think Caitlin Clark is really going to be, you know, the face of the league and something that the WNBA is going to be able to hang their hat on and maybe become actually profitable without having to rely on the NBA to stand it up. But going back to the White House, what do you make of Joe Biden wanting to invite both teams and Shannon Sharpe saying that's going to cost Joe Biden re-election?
First off, I don't know if it's good for Joe Biden. That's neither here nor there. I think, you know, like the common man and thinking about that, like so many participation trophies and blah, 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 blah. Like, I feel like that might only hurt Joe Biden's case, but obviously doesn't really matter. But no, I don't like it. I just think, you know, inviting two teams, it obviously sets a precedent that you're going to have to keep for the rest of, all right, this is at least what we're going to do for women's college basketball. Probably what you'll have to do for almost every other smaller sport, or I guess not even smaller sport for women's basketball now, but it's like, okay, do you not want to grow softball? Do you not want to grow, you know, whatever? And then with, you know, the second place team, it's unfair to every other team afterwards if you're only giving Iowa, you know, a trip to the White House for their recruiting. And then every other team afterwards who finishes second place says, okay, wait, so just because we don't have one great player, it means we can't go to the White House? And then, you know, we can't get, it's like Coach K when he gets to coach the U.S. gold medal Olympic team for 20 years and automatically becomes the best recruiter in college basketball. It's like it helps, you know? And I think it creates a precedent that, you know, for a sport that really doesn't need one.
Yeah.
They had more views than I think a couple of NBA finals games is what did. I saw.
Yep.
Like, I don't know. You know what? If they want to, fine. But like, if I'm putting myself in Angel Reese's shoes or any LSU player's shoes for that matter, I would feel a little bit, you know, this isn't very right. You know, this is my moment. I won the national championship. They didn't.
Yeah, I see. I'm a little less, I don't know, skeptical. I don't know if that's the right word for it. But to me, it doesn't really matter, right? At the end of the day, LSU won the national championship. You can't take that away from him. Doesn't matter. because I would assume they'd invite both teams at different times, probably different months would be my guess, is that, you know, LSU probably comes first and then a month, 2 months later, it's Iowa. So to me, that doesn't really, you know, it doesn't really do anything. Now, I do agree with you that it sets a weird precedent, but we also have to remember that this is an office that changes hands at least, you know, once every 8 years, if not 4 years. Like, if the next first lady comes in and doesn't want to do this, or the next president doesn't want to do this, then that's their prerogative. They don't have to follow the shoes of the predecessors. Will it be a bad look? Maybe. I don't know. But I do agree with your point. Like, well, if you're doing this for women's basketball, which I do think it would help, I do think it helps grow the sport, why aren't you doing it for, like, softball, right? Yeah. Because they could use that help even more than women's basketball right now. So, you know, it is what it is. Moving on to the men's national championship game, UConn. Once again, I mean, we talked about it, you know, the entirety of the tournament, they just dominated, right? Yeah. They do it again. Their average margin of victory throughout the six games of the tournament was 20 points. San Diego State really didn't stand a chance. It was, you know, they got out to the quick, you know, 10-6 lead, hit four of their first five shots, and then proceeded to miss, like, their next 13. Yeah. And that was the point. It was like, even though UConn wasn't shooting the ball well or playing well offensively, it was like, I just don't know if this is going to, you know, if the Aztecs are going to be able to make a comeback here.
Yeah, I think the bottom line why UConn was able to have success and so many other teams didn't, you know, like, I was thinking about that. Like, all right, well, let's compare them to the one seeds and think about why they were able to win the national championship and others couldn't, because they weren't the best team in the regular season, nor were they particularly close. But in the tournament, they were absolutely the best team.
And it wasn't close.
The country wasn't close. And so, you know, the more I thought about it, it's like, okay, defensively, they are rock solid every single time they go out there. Yep. Because they have almost every single player on the court is a very capable defender because they're all long.
Yep.
And they can all switch, you know, through screens, stuff like that really doesn't affect them. They're all athletic, all quick. And then offensively, they have, you know, three or four really capable offensive perimeter players. And then just one absolute stud down there in the interior that they can, you know, rely on to get him a couple of buckets. And it's like, all right, Purdue, what's the difference there? Okay, well, Purdue had the one big guy like Sanogo, but instead it was Zach Edey and had zero perimeter players that could get them a bucket. Yeah. When Edey gets into trouble. Like, that was the thing with UConn. It's like, it's hard to help on Sanogo. You know, UConn will have
players. Otherwise, they're going to make you pay.
Right. Otherwise, you know, players will hit open shots. Okay, well, why not Alabama? Alabama, it's like, all right, you know, a lot of ISO basketball. If XYZ doesn't work, where do we go? You know,
exactly.
If all else fails, what is our, you know, escape plan? Their escape plan was like, hey, get the ball to Brandon Miller. He's your best player. Let him operate. Well, Brandon Miller, you know, he doesn't have one thing that it's like, oh, I can go to this, and it's just overpowered. He goes 3-for-19, and they lose basketball.
Exactly. Like the thing that you know, you can see hindsight of why Alabama lost to San Diego State is because Alabama's play style is, like you mentioned, ISO ball centric, right? They're trying to get one-on-one. Well, San Diego State can guard, you know, 1-5 one-on-one really well, and they're also really good at helping and then getting in the pass lane, rotating so they can get steals in on that secondary pass, or they can make, you know, have tight closeouts on a shot and make you uncomfortable. What UConn does offensively that you know, kind of took away San Diego State's ability to defend one-on-one is they move so well without the basketball that you're looking at off-ball screens, you're looking at just simple backdoor cuts. I mean, we're talking about elementary level basketball stuff, yet that was the reason they won the game. You know, San Diego State, as great of a defensive team as they are, it's tough to keep up with a team that can just run it off ball screens, you know, off ball screens, you know, going down, taking backdoor cuts, and then coming back out to the top for a curl, for a three, or, you know, a mid range jumper. It wears on you, and UConn was able to get a lot of shots at the rim because of it.
Yep.
Sanogo, most outstanding player of the tournament, feels deservedly so. I think he also averaged a double-double throughout the tournament. So he was a fantastic player. UConn, now a blue blood. You cannot argue it.
Five national championships,
as many as Duke and Indiana. Yes, all of them have come in the last 25 years, but you got to, it's not, to me, where we get wrong and where we go astray in this blue blood talk is that people are like, it has to be, you know, historic. I disagree. I think it's about the quantity, right? The fact that UConn has five national championships, regardless of when they come, when they came, it elevates them into that blue blood status. They like the stat. The only stat you need is they have as many national championships as Duke.
Yep.
And yes, they missed the tournament more or losing the first round more than some of these other teams. But the ultimate prize in this sport is winning the national championship, and they've done it more than anybody else in the past 25 years.
I think, you know, people get really blinded, and I have no understanding why, because it doesn't happen in any other sport, by just, like, total brands and, like, imagery, basically. And it's like, all right, the image of playing in that, you know, State Farm Basketball Classic in, you know, Chicago mm-hmm. with Kentucky, Michigan State, Duke, you know, who's
Kansas.
Kansas, there you go. It's like that makes you a blue blood. Like Michigan State's more of a blue blood because they play in that. They do that based on coaches. Coaches yeah. are a huge draw yes. into college basketball. People want to watch John Calipari, Bill Self, Coach K, now John Shire, Tom Izzo, compete in a, you know, four-team event. That's why they do it. That's kind of the biggest draw in college basketball because year in, year out, that's the one constant is yep. the iconic coaches. And for a team like UConn, who has had three different coaches in the last decade, they don't get invited to things like that because there isn't that sort of consistency and stability within their program. But is that to say that they haven't had the accomplishments of Duke or Indiana? Absolutely not. All of the national championships they've won alone should have them in that status. I'm surprised it took people this long
yep.
to put them there. Probably, like you said, because it's happened so quickly since 1999. And I will say this, the curious thing about UConn is, unlike so many other programs, it feels like UConn has had dips in, you know, just quality for like 5 years.
Too.
It's like, you know, if North Carolina missed three straight tournaments, there would be hell to pay.
Yeah.
And that is a differentiation, but it's like results have to matter, mm-hmm. you know, and yep. it can't just all be based on, all right, well, funding and commitment and all of these sort of thing and recruiting. It's got to be based on, well, you know, how many national championships have you won? How much success have you actually had?
Yep.
And in that lens and frame, UConn is absolutely a blue blood. And I think that is how it should be evaluated.
Yes.
I've seen people like online say that there's like four blue bloods, and it's like it's literally just
they're gatekeeping
Duke,
blue bloods.
Yeah. Duke, Kansas, Carolina, and Kentucky, and that's it. And people aren't willing to go like I saw one guy say that. It's just so ridiculous. It's like taking UCLA out of that.
Exactly.
Book,
yeah.
It's just ridiculous. How can you have UCLA and not UConn, even though UConn's won four national championships most recently? And then from a traditionalist standpoint, UCLA is arguably 11. The most storied, you know, college basketball program of all time.
You can rank the blue bloods within that tier if you want, but I think limiting it to four is just, it's so stupid.
I have at least seven. I would throw absolutely UCLA, Indiana,
yep.
and UConn in
yep.
there.
I do agree with you. I think, you know, it's going to be tough because they don't have Jay Wright anymore, but I think Villanova had a little bit of an argument there, at least for a little bit.
Yeah.
And then once Jay Wright retired, it felt like, you know, they kind of lost their identity. But I do think it's interesting. It's kind of an interesting case study. Why is UConn able to come? First of all, how do they go from so high to so low almost instantaneously? And then how are they able to get out of it? Because you see all these programs that Indiana's a great example. Recently, they haven't been able to get out. You know, with as many good teams as they have, as they've had, it's like, how's UConn as, you know, because I think the highest seed UConn has been when they won a national championship was a 3 seed.
That's crazy.
I think. I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure that's the number. So why aren't more teams able to do that? Like, to me, it just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, I think, first off, like, their national championship record, like, that's totally luck. Like, I mean, to get to those spots and win the national championship that consistently,
yeah.
it's, like, partially, like, you kind of have to get a bit lucky, and they haven't. That's fine. But, you know, five national championships are five national championships. That's undisputed. But in the case of Indiana, you know, I get maybe slightly oversimplified, but it's like, it's who you hire as a head yep. coach. And, you know, if you don't hire the right guy, and I think Indiana also suffered some, you know, like they were behind with like, I think some facility stuff, and Assembly Hall was a bit aging and
a bit,
and maybe, you know, I don't know, maybe they were reliant too much on their brand rather than, you know, being like constructive and
yeah.
how to make things better. But I don't know enough about Indiana basketball, but yeah, I think that, you know, it's probably just comes down to like Danny Hurley. I really think he's one of the, you know, five best coaches in college basketball right now. And Indiana, you know, kind of had a couple of guys in there that struggled. You know, Tom Crean didn't quite cut it. Archie Miller didn't quite cut it. And then obviously now I think they probably are on the right path, but it's just taken them a while.
Yeah, and I do think you mentioned Danny Hurley, and I think that, you know, that kind of spoke to the level of coaching. Sure, the teams in the Final Four weren't your typical Final Four teams. You know, most people had one or two of the Final Four teams making it, but the coaching was really good.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, when you talk about Dusty May, when you talk about Jim Larrañaga, you mentioned Danny Hurley. I forget. Butchner? I don't know. But like all four of them, I mean, you listen to them talk, it's all about the players, right? The players buy into the coach because the coach buys into the players. And it seems like, you know, that's kind of the way college basketball is going now, especially with NIL. Like, all of those teams, you know, some of them hit the transfer portal, right? But all of those teams weren't, I guess Miami was, three of the four teams weren't built on NIL, right? They weren't built on, oh, I'm coming here for the money. And I don't know how much of Miami's roster was, but we know at least Nigel Pack, who was key in that run.
Jordan Miller, almost certainly. Like grad transfer.
Exactly, yeah. I mean. So you take that with a grain of salt. But the other three, San Diego State, UConn, and FAU, it was about players coming to a place that they thought that, hey, we can build something here. They bought in the program, and look what happened. I do think that that's going to be the way to win in the future, is getting that total buy-in from the players. And you know, it's not off rip. You're not necessarily going to be, you know, you're not going to be making huge amounts of dollars. But like after the fact, I would be surprised if those three teams didn't have some nice NIL opportunities because of the stage they made it to.
I think that's a good point, and I think what we really learned with like the one and done thing in college basketball specifically is like the most important thing is, you know, balance and variety. Yep. And like having a mix. Like Villanova had so much success with a mix of players like Dante DiVincenzo.
Stop it.
And then you had Chris Jenkins, you know, who was more of a Ryan Archidiacono, who's more of an experienced pro. Yep. And that team had all sorts of success in the 2010s, you know, operating under that. And so I think that's really, and you know, Duke and Kentucky, as much as, you know, we kind of gas them up, like more recently have kind of struggled with that and not having like a higher seed because all of their players are one and done, and that is really a tough model to work with in March. So I think it'll be a mix, really. Like you'll have to have a couple of key transfers, but I think the bones of your roster will have to be players that, you know, have been at your program for years.
Well, FAU is like that. I think I was listening to Dusty May talk, and they got three guys. They felt like the rest of their roster, and it was three guys that came there who, because they knew they were going to play, right? You know, so it's about getting the guys that are right for your team. It's like it, and it, different sports, yes, but it's like what Jim Harbaugh's doing at Michigan. You build the bones, the base of the foundation through recruiting, right? And then for immediate needs, say that recruiting class didn't work out at linebacker, just hit the portal that year and get a guy who worked out at a smaller school. Bring him in, and he can be your starter. But I think coaches are starting to figure that out, and we saw that this year. It was, and I think San Diego State, I think most of them were just recruits too. I don't even think they hit the transfer portal that hard. It was just fourth and fifth year guys. Okay, done with college basketball. College basketball is done for at least another 10 months until January post credit. So we're into the MLB season now, and we've talked about the changes to the game, so we're not gonna dive too deep into that. Although I will say the statistics and data we have out of the first four or five games of the MLB season has been very promising. Time of games has been cut by a half hour. Hitting and slash lines in total have been up. It's more singles too. So as stolen bases up too by a lot. I did see someone like the stolen base percentage was like 76%.
Yeah, I was like,
but I think once teams start to steal more, then that number will come down. Cause like last night I was watching the Tigers play and Matt Vierling, it was so, like he tried to steal second and it wasn't even close. So teams will start to find like, hey, here's how much we can run without getting caught. But I think right now you're starting to, like, you're just seeing, it's like the, what do they call it? The, incubation period, where it's like you're there, and you're still kind of feeling it out. And once you get
right,
it'll be okay. But acclimation.
I see what you're saying. So it's like as it is right now, like teams will milk that if it stays
exactly
that way.
Exactly.
If it actually was like a 76% chance to steal bases, teams would steal almost every single time. And what's going to happen is you're going to find this like area where you'll have probably what the MLB at least hope for, which is like, you know, 60-70% of your team can steal.
Exactly.
And, you know, instead of just one or two guys, you'll have, you know, half the lineup that can.
Because it was just like, once you got a guy on first, it was like, catchers now are so good with, and pitchers are so, have such velocity on their pitches. It was like,
quicker releases. It seems like even getting rid of the ball.
Even a catcher that had an average pop time could get it done in a second before the runner was there, just because the pitchers are just so much quicker with the release and more velocity on the pitches. Now I think you're starting to see it even out a little bit, which is good for the game, right? You get more guys in scoring position, you eventually see more runs scored. Plus, you know, for especially, maybe not for the casual fan, but for, you know, a person who enjoys watching the MLB, stolen bases are fun. Like, they do add some enjoyment and excitement to the game. With all that being said, we're going to get into our predictions. So we're going to go 1 through 5 for each of the six divisions.
Yep.
And then we're going to give you our playoffs. So we're going to start. Where do you want to start?
Start with the AL East. They come up first in your MLB standing, so we'll start there.
We'll start with the AL East. Obert, give me your five.
I'm taking the Tampa Bay Rays. I think this team always plays well during the regular season. I think they just have so much pitching. Charlie Morton's still there. Shane McClanahan's still there. Don't know the update on Glass now, but I think he should be back at some point. Fairbanks, their closer, is an absolute stud. And then that starting lineup, which typically has kind of been the flaw of the team, has talent.
Yep.
And I think it's relatively young. I think it will only keep improving. And I think this team has had a lot of success in the regular season in the past and will continue to have it this year. And I think they get the one seed in the AL East. Maybe the one seed overall. We'll see. Guardians. Number two, Toronto Blue Jays. I have right there. I think this starting lineup is as good as any in baseball. I think it's just loaded with talent. I like the moves they made. Obviously, they still have Vladimir Guerrero Jr. But overall, I think this is a really, really talented team. The only question will be, do they have enough pitching, starting pitching particularly, to get the job done? Alec Manoah, I know, is a really good starting pitcher for him last year, but I feel like kind of they, you know, disappointed last year compared to kind of, you know, the high expectations that everyone had. Whit Merrifield is a guy I really like there. And I think they finished second in the division and are one of the best teams in baseball, but just come up short of winning the division. Yankees, I have at 3. I don't love how this roster is constructed whatsoever. I think they're doing a much better job than they used to, but you looked at last year and it just felt like they weren't giving their, you know, really promising young players a lot of chances. Anthony Volpe only got a chance to start at, I think, short or maybe third this year because, you know, Josh Donaldson was taking up ABs, you know, in that lineup. And it's like, what is that going to get you?
Yep.
You know, maybe a year of an league average sort of player at this point in his career. I don't really get that. Isaiah Kiner-Falefa spent, you know, so many games as a starting shortstop. It's just like, I just don't get that. What's the problem in giving some of your young guys a chance like the Astros have had so much success with? Maybe they know something I don't and the younger players aren't quite there. But I just think that might cost them. And so many of their really good players, whether it be Anthony Rizzo, Aaron Judge, Giancarlo Stanton, are, you know, over the hill and are past 30. And it's just like, I don't really know where that goes. I think Carlos Rodon, who was their big pickup as a starting pitcher, I think he's going to be out for a long time, if not the whole season, with some sort of injury. He did have an injury. I'm getting confused with somebody else. But, you know, I think their starting pitching is still fine, but I feel like for a regular season team, they had a lot of success last year. I think Aaron Judge's, you know, home run thing was a big part of that because it felt like there was a lot of energy in almost every game they played with all these fans looking for that Aaron Judge home run ball. And I think that kept them going, even though I didn't think they were playing great baseball towards the end of the regular season, and it showed up big time in the playoffs. But I think that really covered up for a lot of their aging flaws on this team. And, you know, I've got concerns about, you know, what happens if a couple of these guys start to show, all right, you know, we have a down year, and what happens to, you know, the Yankees, who had a lot of players on this team where it's like 5 years ago they were some of the best players in baseball, but right now, I don't know. And then four, I have the Orioles. I think this is a young, up-and-coming team. Anthony Santander, Rutschman, their catcher is fantastic. Cedric Mullins made the USA team, although he's not great. He's still, you know, a very good player, but I just don't see them cracking the top three. And then the Red Sox finish in fifth. Talented roster, but starting pitching, really have a lot of questions about that with Chris Sale, who I think made his, you know, like first pitching start in years and got absolutely beaten up. So I don't know if he's ever going to be the player he used to be. That's my top five.
My five, I got the Yankees one. I agree with all of your points. To me, it just doesn't feel like this is the year for it. I think that next year is when you're going to start to see the fall off of a lot of these players. And do I think that Aaron Judge is going to have the same season that he had last year? Probably not. But I also think that Giancarlo Stanton and Anthony Rizzo are going to be a bit better than they were last year. So I think that those will even out. I think that pitching, you know, as inconsistent as it has been in the past, I think it kind of finds even water as well. They're starting to infuse the roster with a little bit more young talent, with Volpe, you know, being injected in the starting lineup. So I think that this year they'll reclaim the crown of number one in the AL East. But I think that this is probably the last year, considering who's coming up behind them. I have the Blue Jays at number two as well. And to me, the Blue Jays kind of feel like the Los Angeles Chargers, a team everything is there, the pieces are there, but every time you bank on them to get it right, something falters at the end of the season. And, you know, I as much as I want to believe in the Blue Jays to, you know, I almost picked them to win the division. I did. And I was like, well, I also picked them to win the division last year, and what happened, right? They, yep. they choke at the end of the season and don't even make the playoffs. But you said the talent is there. It's hard not to pick a team that is as loaded.
The Blue Jays did make the playoffs but got beat by your Mariners.
Did they?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. I think they were at home, and yeah, that's right. They were at home and got beat, I think, two games to none.
I just got that must have just left. But, like, I think the Rays are also a really good team, and I think that the AL is, you know, there might not be many teams at the top that are, you know, fantastic, but I think you've got this clump of teams that are all going to be competing in, like, that 90-win range. It's like, well, is this team? I think the end of the season wildcard race is going to be a lot of fun.
I for sure agree. I think we have like maybe three teams in the entire AL where you're like, yeah, they probably don't have any chance. But other than that, I think that's about it. I think it's really just three teams.
And it's three teams that don't have a chance. But it's also like, well, how many teams do you see getting out of the AL while also having a chance to win the World Series? It's like, there's not that many of those either. So it kind of feels like how the maybe the AFC feels or NFC feels like, where it's like, it's like you have, you know, you're one or two at the top and it's like this big clump of teams, but there's not that many at the bottom. Right. Yeah. So I have the Rays at three because of that fantastic team. I don't know where they fit. They do benefit by playing the Tigers in the first series where they got a sweep. But, I think that they're, you know, I just don't know if they're going to be able to keep up throughout the 162 game season. I have the Orioles at four. Really love that team. They're young, so inexperience is going to play a factor. But Adley Rutschman is a fun player to watch. It'll be interesting to see how long he stays in Baltimore before they decide to
get rid of him. For a king's ransom if he ever gets traded. I mean, holy shit.
And then I got the Red Sox at five. They just don't impress me, right? You look at their lineup on the offensive side, and it's like, oh, this team's going to be really good. And then you look at their bullpen, their rotation, it's like, that's a triple A roster right there. And so you really have to decipher, like, well, which Red Sox team are you going to get? Are you going to get the one that, you know, is hitting a bunch of long fly balls to, you know, shallow left field over the monster, or to the short or the smaller fence in right field? Or are you getting the team that's going to give up those to the other team? So I got that's by five of the AL East, but I do think it'll be a fun division.
AL Central. I've got the Guardians, Twins, White Sox, Tigers, and Royals. Guardians, this one's fairly obvious. Number one team last year in this division. I do think the Twins get really close to winning this division because I did like the changes they made. Picking up Pablo Lopez makes that starting, you know, pitching rotation one of the best in baseball, with Kenta Maeda, obviously Pablo Lopez, and a few guys are really liked there, but I don't think they quite have enough. But with the Guardians, I do like the addition of Josh Bell. I think that lineup's fantastic. I think it's really young, which is good for the regular season. Bullpen's obviously one of the best in baseball. That was the big thing in the playoffs. And then starting pitching, I think, is the thing that, you know, is really obviously was kind of tough with the 4 and 5 starters last year, but I think it could really improve with the young guys in AAA, Gavin Williams, Daniel Espino, who Daniel Espino won't come up, but, you know, Tanner Bibby might come up and make an impact. And then that, you know, starting pitching rotation becomes absolutely elite come October, which could bode well for the Guardians of the playoffs. I think that they'll win the division. Twins finish a close second, probably make the playoffs, and then White Sox finish third. Talented lineup, but you know, same issues last year. You know, I think last year the thing that really got him, it was like a really promising starting rotation, and then Lance Lynn didn't have the year they wanted him to. And, you know, this year I think it could be the exact same sort of thing. I don't know. Maybe it'll help, but you know, I didn't love the addition of Mike Clevinger, former Cleveland Indian at the time, great, and, you know, really had kind of some woes with the Padres. I just don't really buy into the starting rotation still. And pretty much for the most part, their bullpen, not a lot to be very excited about. So we'll see. Liam Hendricks is battling cancer, but he's coming back, so maybe that'll be an addition at some point, but we'll see. And then Tigers and Royals, 4 and 5, not a lot to get excited about these two teams. I think with the Tigers, like, for them to be like on the right track and really be in like a good spot, they'll need like Riley Green to be a superstar and some, you know, like they'll need like also like Spencer Torkelson to get better. And, you know, like for them to have hope, like it's all about the young guys really improving and doing very well for this team to have promise. Like, this is one of the teams I'm writing off. Like, I don't think, you know, with all due respect, I can't really envision a path where this team cracks the playoffs and makes some noise in October. I just can't. Same thing with the Royals. It's like just not a ton of talent there anymore. It's hard to say. I do kind of like the Royals' starting pitching with Brady Singer, but it's tough. It's like when you're in the regular season, you don't have a lineup that you can rely on hardly at all with a lot of talent there. It's like you're just not going to win a lot of games. Yeah. But yeah, we'll see. That's my 4 and 5.
We have the exact same 1 through 5. How about that?
I think the AL Central was like pretty easy. Yeah.
So my thing is that when you're picking the AL Central, it's, you got to look at, well, how much money are the Guardians spending? Because if they're spending a lot of money, it means they know they have a window, and they know they have a window right now because they're giving out contract extensions. They're spending on free agents. They're bringing guys in. And so I picked them to finish first. You know, what they did last year was fantastic. Took the Yankees to 5 games in the ALDS. And I think they can absolutely, you know, make a lot of noise again this year. They're just, their team, you know, offensively, defensively, it's just a really complete roster. There's not many holes that you can poke. It's like, well, you know, what about closing pitching? It's like, maybe. Emmanuel Clase had a tough outing in Oakland, but like, one game. Last year he was a guy.
Stud.
And then the Twins at 2, like you, I think they're going to be a really good team this year. I just don't think they're going to be better than the Guardians. The White Sox, you know, Dylan Cease is going to have a 1.6 ERA and he's going to finish with like a .500 record as a starter. He's going to be a Cy Young candidate because he is that good. It's just the offense just isn't going to deliver. And neither is the rest of the pitching staff. So, you know, I honestly wouldn't be surprised if they traded him this season to a, you know, Yankees or Dodgers team, just because he is going to go for a lot of money at some point. Might as well get some assets for him on a middling team that doesn't look like they're going to be very good.
I think they'll have to be pretty bad to make that move, but they could be.
I feel like that at no point during the season are they going to be, you know, within reasonable shot of a wild card or winning division. And so it's going to be like, well, you're average. Like, you're hovering around .500. What are you going to do? Yeah. And I think they're going to have to come to a realization that, hey, we're probably not in the right spot. And then Tigers 4, Royals 5. Yeah, I told you that my expectation was, I think I said 75 wins. That was probably a little much. I'd say 70. As long as you improve on last year, 166 games last year, and all the young guys look better. So, you know, Riley Green so far has looked like a really good player. Spencer Torkelson has had his ups and downs. I just don't know if he's ever going to reach his, you know, what we thought his potential was. I do think Riley Green will become a superstar, though. The problem with this team, and not to mention the addition of Matt Vierling paying off already. He's one of the best hitters in our lineup. He's batted one, he's batted seven. But the problem is the pitching. And you know, for everything that Al Avila did, he drafted a lot of starting pitching. And none of them have really turned out to be, you know, anything special. Which it's tough because you take a guy like Casey Mize at one, who's a sinker pitcher. He can't keep his sinker down and it's getting destroyed, right? So what do you do? A guy like Matt Manning, who was a little bit on the older side when you drafted him, hasn't been able to figure it out. You know, the starting pitching has been fine this year. A guy like Joey Wentz had a really good outing, but I don't know if you're going to be able to count on that. And the bullpen has been just as bad as the bullpen, you know, has been in the past, you know, 5-6 years. Alex Lang is the one exception. And you know, as good as he is, he's one guy, right? Who's going to come in, and I think he's going to be our closer. So, and then the Royals are just the Royals. Like they got a couple guys. I just don't know, you know, where they're going to go. Like
I don't think they'll be very competitive. We'll see. AL West, I got Mariners, Astros, Rangers, Angels, and Athletics. With the Mariners, I think that this is, you know, a really, really good lineup. The only thing will be, do they have, like, for the regular season at least, do they have enough starting pitching? And it's Luis Castillo's a stud. Logan Gilbert, I really like, who I saw against the Guardians a couple of nights ago, and I think he's going to be a really good player, and he's still young. But Marco Gonzalez, I'm not super high on. Robbie Ray, I'm not super high on.
Robbie Ray, that's a blast from the past.
So it's like, you know, will they? I'm sure they'll have to add on, you know, to their starting pitching at the trade deadline, and I bet they will, knowing the Mariners. But, you know, come playoff time, you'll need probably two more really good. I don't know what, you know, Mariners fans' opinions of Robbie Ray is, but it's like, I don't know if that guy's a bona fide two starter, three starter for a World Series team. I don't know. But you know, this lineup, I've always talked about this. When you have a stud catcher that can hit as well as Cal Raleigh can, it makes a huge difference to not have that huge hole in your lineup where it's like, that guy won't be able to hit. That guy will not be able to get us a hit. He'll hit 200 for the entire year, hit five home runs. It's like, that really hurts.
That's been the Tigers catching spot
for decades.
I guess Alex Avila was the one exception, but...
But, yeah, so I think that is a huge difference maker. Julio's been very good so far. I get the bad start. I'm really not worried about it. I think that
it's because they had to play a really good Guardians team.
Yeah, oh, yeah. We took 3 or 4 away from them. But I think up and down the lineup, it's really good players and a lot of good defenders, too. So I think the Mariners are the best team in this division. And my two, the Astros, I kind of have some questions about. I think that, you know, obviously they've got off to a little bit of a tough start, but I think overall that's not really, you know, the question mark. I did like the Jose Abreu pickup. I think that was a good one.
Yep.
But it's an older team now, yes. Even with, you know, yep. Jeremy Pena, who's a really good player. It's still a lot of Alex Bregman and Jose Altuve, who's injured right now. Kyle Tucker's in between-ish, but,
you know. Was he 29?
Yeah, something like, I would guess like 27. I don't know.
Really?
28 maybe. But it is an older lineup. I do, you know, have a couple of questions about that. And then without Justin Verlander, you know, how much starting pitching do
they really have? 26.
Yeah.
He just turned 26 too.
Yeah. That's the thing. That's why they've been so successful. It's like all of these younger players that have had success. But nowadays, you know, when you look at kind of this lineup, Altuve is really old. Abreu is really old. Bregman is really old. I do still love Yordan Alvarez, but I think the biggest question for this team will be, how can some of these other starting pitchers step up and be really good players? Three. Three Rangers. Big pickup of Jacob DeGrom.
Will he pitch it all this season?
Yeah. How healthy can he be? It was like an NBA superstar last year. It was like Zion.
And he comes back and gets absolutely belted.
Right. By the Padres.
No. The Phillies.
No, they lost the Mets. They lost the Padres.
I was talking about the Rangers this year because he made the start opening day.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Got absolutely belted by the Phillies, right? But they come back to win that game. So this team's off to a 3-1 start. I don't know how much I buy into it. Corey Seager, Marcus Semien, you know, pretty good hitters. But I think at the end of the day, it's kind of smoke and mirrors. I'm not sold on the Rangers yet. Four, I have the Angels. I think, you know, I've fallen for this trap a couple of times. I think Anthony Rendon is an absolute superstar. And I remember how good he was with the Nationals back in the day. It was like, holy cow, you add that to Shohei Ohtani and Mike Trout, a guy who hardly ever gets talked about. This could be an absolute, you know, kind of dynasty. But they don't have the starting pitching. They don't have enough hitters. Taylor Ward was really good at the beginning of last year, but that didn't hold up. And so it gets to a point where it's like, and I think there's also kind of a culture around this team where it's like they just don't know how to win. I think it was higher on this team last year. They get off to a really good start, don't do anything for the rest of the season. I'm gonna be low on them until they change my mind. Five, I've got the Athletics. This is the easiest pick on any list I think I've had so far. This is one of the least talented teams in professional baseball, and I don't see that changing anytime soon. Shea Longleers is maybe the one bright spot there. I like him as a catching prospect, really, because he hasn't really shown a ton yet. But other than that, it is ugly.
So, yeah, I kind of took the exact opposite approach of you. I am buying into the Angels this year. I am absolutely doing it. You cannot tell me that you have two of the top five best players in the MLB, and then you add Anthony Rendon, and it doesn't work out? Come on! What are we doing? So, yeah, I'm going to go with the Angels one. I feel like there is just, yes, the roster might not be as complete as you'd like it to be, but there's just too much talent on the top end to not at least finish top two in this division. I'm going to pick them one just because I believe in Shohei and Mike Trout. And I believe in that trio. I'm going to do it. Two, I got the Mariners. I'm a huge Mariners guy. Love the Mariners. But, you know, the question is, are they going to be consistent? Because that was the problem last year. It was a lot of ups and downs, And they kind of hit their stride at the end of the season and were able to at the end of the season, they lost like their last six before the playoffs, right?
Who's this?
The Mariners.
Oh, I don't remember. But
I think because I was like, are they actually not going to make the playoffs? I think they lost like their last five or six games. And so it's really about can they figure it out and being consistent? I have the Astros three. You know, I don't know how I feel about them. Their starting pitching just feels kind of weak.
Without Justin Verlander, man.
Exactly. And the relievers aren't all that special either. That lineup, the batting order is going to help them. But, you know, I watched them last night against the Tigers, and it really felt like, you know, if they don't have Yordan Alvarez, that lineup just isn't that's scary, right?
Yeah.
Because Jose Altuve is going to be out a couple months with a broken thumb. I feel like that they're way too reliant on Yordan to deliver the big hits game in and game out. Game one, he hit, didn't he hit a home run to tie against the White Sox in the like ninth inning or to go down one run?
They were
down 3-1 and then he hit one to go 3-2. It's like you can't rely on one guy to get every single hit for you.
Right.
Yes, the Astros are a good team. They have the talent there. It's just whether or not everybody else is going to, you know, kind of reach the level that Yordan's playing at. And to be frank, I don't know if they will. Honestly, I think Yordan could be AL MVP this year. He's been hitting the ball already in the first couple of games. He's been hitting the cover off of it. Average has been, you know, all right. But he's the one he hit against the Tigers yesterday was, oh my God. And then I have the Rangers four. I'm sorry, I just don't believe in the Rangers. You can spend as much money as you want. I just don't. Josh Hamilton's gone, man. He's gone.
They're off to a good start.
They are off to a good start. I know. Yeah, and they did it against the Phillies, too.
Yeah. Man.
Crazy.
Very surprising.
And then the Athletics, I have five. Like you said, that was about the easiest thing they could ever. It's just terrible. Such an easy pick.
NL East. Braves, I have finishing first. I think, you know, when you have the just total roster stability and talent throughout, you know, pitching, starting lineup, it makes for a really easy finish first in the division, as stacked as this division is. And it is, I think that, you know, I think the lineup will be very good this year. Obviously, Acuna will be very good. Ozzy Albie, like, it's just, it's stacked. You know, Sean Murphy was a nice pickup for them. I think, you know, they probably were looking for some defense at that position, and I think they got some. Obviously, one of the best defensive catchers in baseball, and, you know, no slouch at the plate. I just think this becomes a really good team. Two, I have the Phillies. I'm a huge believer in the Phillies, even though they have the 0-4 start. All of that, you know, talent, it does remind me of, you know, the Angels, if the Angels had a complete team. It is, you know, players like Trey Turner, Bryce Harper, JT Realmuto, Nicholas Castellanos. I mean, it's just ridiculous. And Rhys Hoskins before he went down, it is.
How long is he out for?
He's out for the season. He like blew out his knee.
That's what I thought.
Like that. But it is a stacked lineup, and I think that in a, you know, 162 game season, they could seriously stack up some wins. But, you know, the biggest thing for the Phillies will be that starting pitching, and how much can they overcome that? I think it hurt them a little bit in the World Series, and it's hurt them a lot so far this year, giving up 16 runs, 8 runs, 11 runs, yep. I think, in one game.
Yep, that was game one. Lost 11-7.
Yeah, so they've had some ugly pitching performances, but I'll have them finishing second because I'm a big believer in them. Three, I have the Mets. I almost wonder how much that awful, awful finish to the regular season and postseason sticks inside their head, because they were the team of the year,
yep,
probably 60-70% of the way through the season, and absolutely choked, not making it to the NLDS by losing the division and then getting beat pretty handedly by the San Diego Padres.
Yep.
So I think that, you know, I almost wonder if that, you know, sort of collapse sticks in their head. It's still a talented roster. Pete Alonso still, you know, hit a bunch of home runs, I'm sure, and Francisco Lindor is still a really good player. I like the pickup of Justin Verlander for now, obviously, and obviously letting Jacob deGrom go, you know, sucks, but it is what it is. I just think early on in the season, it could be difficult for a team that, you know, struggled as much as they did in the second half. I think they finished third. Fourth, I have the Marlins. Just not a very talented team, obviously. And fifth, I have the Nationals. So that's my five in the NL East.
We have the same 1 through 5 again. I mean, we're talking about when you talk about the Braves, you're talking about, you know, one of the hottest teams over the last 2 months of the regular season last year, where they were winning games at, like, I think 116 game pace. Like, it was, they were just absolutely destroying baseballs and just pummeling teams. So and the roster is better than it was last year with the addition of Sean Murphy. So I think that there's, you know, we'd be silly not to pick them to repeat as division champs. Two, I got the Phillies. I think that the poor start has really shown some, you know, some issues with that team. Not having Bryce Harper hurts. Yeah. And then losing Rhys Hoskins for the entire year is not, you know, you don't want that to happen. But now you have to stick and move, right? You got to figure out a way to play without him. And I think they will. I think this rough start, it could happen for, you know, you don't want it to, but I think it could be a 3 week, you know, where they win 6 games in the 3 weeks. And it's like, how good is this team?
Right.
I think they'll figure it out. It'll kind of be like the Nationals were when they won it in 2019, where they started, you know, not quite as bad, but you know, in that same sense that, you know, it's going to be more exponential, where it takes time. And then once they hit it, they're gone. And then three, I have the Mets. You know, not having Justin Verlander to start the season, that's going to suck. This team is really built on the big name players. It's not really, you know, that complete, kind of like the Angels. But the Mets don't have one of their players. So, you know, Marlins, I have fourth. They're on the younger side, right? Just don't have the talent experience combo yet. And then the Nationals are, you know, just not a very good team. It's as simple as that.
Only 50 minutes, so we'll have to speed run this. But NL Central, Cardinals, Brewers, Cubs, Pirates, Reds. Brewers, Cardinals, Cubs, Pirates, Reds. I like the Brewers this year. I think that their lineup is a bit underrated. I think that the Cardinals take a bit of a step back for a team that, you know, kind of prides itself on, you know, having a really good lineup. It's like, I don't know, you know, if their lineup is so solid after, you know, their first few hitters with Newt Barr and, you know, Goldschmidt and Arenado. I think after that, it's not, you know, insane. So I think that the Cardinals kind of take a step back this year, but more than anything, it's just about how good the Brewers are. I think they have a really good season. Cubs, I have at 3. I think that, you know, the few adjustments and pickups that this team made, Cody Bellinger, obviously, a bit washed, but, you know, still, it's crazy because he's still so young, but, you know, I don't know. I guess that this team could be decent. And then 4 Pirates and 5 Reds. I think this is one of the worst divisions in baseball. I like the Pirates a lot. Seeing that lineup, it's a lot of really compelling stories and names. I don't know how productive a lot of those guys will be, but Jackson Smith and Jigba's younger brother, or maybe, no, I think his older brother, has to be. O'Neill Cruz, obviously, has gotten off to a pretty cool start. Andrew McCutchen is back in Pittsburgh. So a lot of really cool stories, but and I think that makes them good enough to be above the Reds, but that's my 5.
I got the Cardinals, Brewers, Reds, Pirates, Cubs. I really like the Cardinals, man. There's something about, you know, they might not be the best team throughout the entirety of the regular season, but when they're hot, they're hot. And it's just kind of like, you know, a St. Louis Cardinals thing. It doesn't matter who the manager is. It doesn't matter who's on the team. It's just kind of this aura about them. And I know that makes zero logistical sense, but it's how I make my picks sometimes. Brewers, I have 2. Like you mentioned, really, really good team, and I wouldn't be surprised if they finish 1 in this division. The bottom 3, I really don't care about all that much. They're all just kind of not good teams. But I do think the Reds will surprise some people this year and won't be as bad as Carl says they are. And then I like the Pirates, like you said, for the Pirates, a lot of great names, great stories, but how good are they going to be? And I just think the Cubs are trying so hard to maintain any sort of relevancy.
Yep. NL West, I have Padres, Dodgers, Rockies, Giants, Diamondbacks. I'm going to buy in on the Padres this year. They were close last year and, you know, in the end had a really good season. Just, you know, didn't quite, you know, get probably to their goals. I think that as far as a plethora of really good hitters, they're as good as any team in the league, especially infielders. It seems like with Machado, Ha-Sung Kim was fantastic towards the second half of last year, which kind of got lost and all that. Xander Bogaerts now, Fernando Tatis, which they can do whatever they want with. You know, Jake Cronenworth, they signed to a big extension. Like, this is a for real lineup. And it just comes down to how good can, you know, Joe Musgrove be and some of their starting pitching, Yu Darvish. But, you know, I think the talent is completely there. It's just about putting it together for a regular season. Hopefully they don't have as much turbulence for their sake. Mm-hmm. And a guy like, you know, Fernando Tatis doesn't get suspended the entire year. Yeah. And there's, you know, constant fighting, it felt like. But I think if they get some more stability there, they become one of the best teams in the regular season. Dodgers at 2. I think they take a step back-ish. I think that
they're not going to win 116 games.
No, I think that they're really old. I thought, you know, for the playoffs, they had a lot of dead weight on that lineup. It felt like Justin Turner, it just didn't feel like was all that productive. And Cody Bellinger obviously hadn't been productive in years, but it is still an older roster. Mookie Betts isn't getting any younger. Freddie Freeman, obviously. I don't know if he had the, you know, insane year that he had some of those years with the Braves. So that's where I have them at 2. Rockies at 3, maybe a slight surprise, but I think that the Rockies overall, I really like their lineup. There's some younger pieces there. I still love Charlie Blackmon. I think he will contribute for them. And I think that this is a team that will hit, you know, the tar out of the ball. CJ Cron is still very good. So, I think the Rockies will surprise some people. And then 4 and 5, I have Giants and Diamondbacks. No hate to the Giants or Diamondbacks, but not going to be as good as the Rockies.
I have Padres, Dodgers, Giants, Rockies, Diamondbacks. I feel like I'm going to be redundant if I hit on too many of the same things. Padres, one of the most talented teams in baseball. Dodgers, old, just aren't going to be able to do what they did last year. Giants, they're just consistency. That's what they are. They're just consistent. The Rockies, still too young for me as a whole. You mentioned the veteran pieces that do have. They're fun. They're going to be a fun
Chris
team.
Chris Bryant, I forgot about that.
Oh, he's on the Rockies? Interesting. Maybe they will finish better than 4th.
Jerks and Profar. And then, that's terrible pitching, though. But, hey.
Hey, you don't need – listen, playing in Coors, it's almost better to have terrible pitching, right? Just because it's gonna get hit out of the park anyway, right? So exactly. So and then Diamondbacks five. Okay, let's get into our playoffs now. Give me your 1-6 in the AL and then your 1-6 in the NL.
Okay, 1-6 in the AL. Mariners, I have at 1.
Ooh.
2, I have Guardians. 3, I have Rays. 4, Blue Jays. 5, Astros. 6, Twins. No Yankees in the playoffs. I'm not high on the Yankees, man. It's like, I think that they could have been gone a long way with a player like Brian Reynolds. I felt like they got a guy who could give them a lot of defense and still provide a ton of hitting with some youth and just some overall energy there. It would have helped them a lot, but instead it was like, you know, some extra starting pitching, which was cool. I think their pitching will get healthier and that helps a bit, but I just feel like this whole thing around the Yankees, and maybe this is too much of like a feel thing rather than logic, but like, it does feel like it's tired, and it feels like there is a lot of, you know, pent
sometimes
up.
Your feelings are right.
Yeah, maybe, but it feels like there is like I could just see this thing almost, you know, like slightly go south where they lose a few games in a row, and that fan base just, there is a lot of anger in that fan base. Fan bases don't like it when teams don't meet expectations and have been similar for years. In other words, similar coaching staff, and you know, Aaron Boone's hasn't been, you know, tenured too long, but these core of players have been there for
Cashman's been there a while, hasn't he?
Yes, for decades. That core of players has been there for so long. It's like last year when they didn't perform in the ALCS and struggled with us in the ALDS, there was just so much aggression, frustration, and I think that could really boil over here, and it's kind of becomes a wake-up call for the Yankees where it's like, maybe we kind of need to rebuild. Maybe we need to get some of these younger players more opportunities rather than insisting that this is still the team. So I have them missing the playoffs. I could absolutely be wrong. This is a very talented roster, more talented than some of the teams I had in my top six. But at the end of the day, a lot of times it doesn't come down to talent. And we've seen that with the Yankees in the past. If it did, they would have had a lot more, you know, success. So, I just wonder if you know, frustration really starts to get crazy with the Yankees with this current, you know, mold, what happens? But I don't really think there are too many other surprises in there. Mariners at 1, like pretty much I said.
Yep. You're a big Mariners guy.
Really believe in that. And also I'll say this, that bullpen is one of the best, I mean, I've seen a long time. Like, they have 3 relievers, Matt Brash, Andre Munoz, and Paul Sewald, who are studs, like absolute, like all-star level relievers. Come October, that is fantastic. And so when you have something like that with the starting lineup that they have, it's hard to pick against them.
My 6, Yankees, Guardians, Angels, Mariners, Twins, Blue Jays. So no Astros after they just won the World Series. Yeah, I'm sorry.
6 or 5.
I just don't believe in them this year. I love watching Yordan play, but it's the rest of the team. I mentioned, I feel like I hit it in the head a bunch of times. I don't love the roster the way it is constructed currently. I do think the Yankees won about 108 games this year. I think they're going to be a really good regular season team, but I think that you're going to see the same playoff woes. I don't know if they're as good as they are. I don't know if they're built for the playoffs. The Guardians at 2, it just feels like this is destiny. Like, it's going to happen. They're going to finish as, you know, the second best team in the AL. No matter who's number 1, they're going to finish number 2. And then I have the Angels 3. It's going to be a tight race between them and the Mariners. I fully acknowledge that. That's why I have the Mariners at 4. I think that it could be separated by a game. But I do think there's going to be a lot of good battles. And I think that playing in that division, you're going to see a lot of, you know, a lot of unexpected losses. Like you saw in game 1 of the Angels, they lost to the Athletics 2-1. Yep. In a game that Shohei Ohtani was absolutely brilliant. And Mike Trout who was their center fielder that made the wacky catch like over his shoulder? I can't remember who it was.
Don't remember either.
Twins at 5, they're just going to be a good team. They just are. And then Blue Jays at 6, I just think it's going to be one of those, or they could be the 4 seed, and then at the end of the season, they lose like 5 straight games, and it's like, well, okay, now you're the 6.
Padres, Braves, Brewers, Phillies, Dodgers, Mets, Cardinals don't make it. I think the NL at that top 6, it's just really solid, and I think that, you know, the Cardinals could miss out on the playoffs winning 88, 90 games, something like that, and it could be a surprise. But I think that's how competitive that side of, you know, that top portion. Because there's so many teams, in my opinion, that really, you know, don't have a lot of energy in the National League side. I don't know how good, you know, the Marlins or Nationals will be. Cubs, Pirates, Reds all might really struggle.
Yep.
And, you know, Diamondbacks / Rockies, Giants probably won't struggle that much. But, you know, that's like a lot of, a big portion of your entire, you know, National League probably won't be very competitive. And so I think what you could see is, you know, a bunch of teams feasting on those lower competition. You have some really inflated records going into the playoffs, and a team like the Cardinals gets excluded. So we'll see how that all shapes out, but that's how I have it as of right now. It's probably the only huge surprise. And like I said, Brewers winning the division. So
I got Padres, Braves, Cardinals, Dodgers, Phillies, Mets. It's the same thing as you. I just flipped the teams.
Yep.
I think that the Cardinals will probably be worse than the 4 and 5 seed in terms of record, the Dodgers and Phillies, but they win their division, so they get the 3 seed, right? That's how the playoffs work. But yeah, not too many surprises for me either. It just, this kind of feels like a very top heavy conference where there's like 7 teams that are really good, and then the rest of it is just mid. It's just not really anything that you're looking forward to see.
Yeah. With the playoffs, I have in the first round Blue Jays and Astros, 4 and 5. I think the Blue Jays take this, unless the Astros make some unprecedented moves in the trade deadline to get a lot better with their starting pitching. I think the Blue Jays, it probably comes a battle of, you know, starting lineup, and, you know, in a 3-game series, it'll be, all right, who is the better couple of starting pitchers? And it will be Alek Manoah who they'll throw out there and somebody else. And it will be enough because the Astros have
who as their ace and second best pitcher. So I think that is kind of a good matchup for the Blue Jays, and they finally win a playoff series. Twins against Rays. I would take the Twins there. I think that's kind of a surprise, but, you know, the Rays really struggled last year. When you're in this sort of mode and you're playing only, you know, like all-star level starting pitching, you need hitters who are pretty much stars, and they didn't have any of that last year and scored, I think, a combined 2 runs in the game against us, or maybe even just 1 run. And I don't really see that changing unless they have a ton of improvement or trade deadline moves. And I don't see that happening. Should I go over the NL?
Actually go over the NL.
NL wild card real quick. I have Mets over Brewers, 6-3 again, but I think the Mets, I think they finally figure it out in the playoffs. And I think they start to get better as the season kind of winds down. And so I think they'll have some momentum going into that series, and they win that series. And then 4 and 5, like I said, big believer in the Phillies. I think they beat the Dodgers probably pretty handedly, too. I think that Phillies are a really good team this year.
Hold on, I'm making some last-second changes. This would be the... okay, so my NL is Mariners, Twins is my 4-5, and I got the Mariners winning that one pretty easily. I don't think that the Twins are going to be able to keep up with A, the hitting, and then B, the like you mentioned, the bullpen of the Mariners. And then I got the Angels over the Blue Jays. This is a pipe dream for me. I just really want to see the Angels not only get to the playoffs but actually succeed there. Because if I can watch, you know, the best players in the sport play, it would be fun. You know, when the games actually matter the most, that would be cool. I do think that when you play a 3-game series and then one of them you got to go up against Shohei Ohtani, and he'll likely come out of the bullpen in Game 3 if he needs to, even on short rest. It's like I feel like the Angels will do whatever they can to win that series, even if it means pitching Shohei, you know,
into the ground,
literally until his arm throws off, or falls off. But it just kind of feels like the Angels need one here, and they're finally going to get it done. And then in the NL, I originally had the Cardinals winning, and I was like, wait a second. I'm just completely forgetting the fact that the Mets will have Justin Verlander at that point this season, and then you got to play Max Scherzer, Justin Verlander, a 2-game series. As good as I think the Cardinals are in the regular season, you're losing both of those games, right? You're going to have to score I don't know, probably five runs off of the bullpen per game, because you're not going to get anything off the starting pitching. And then I have the Phillies over the Dodgers, 5-4. I just don't know how good the Dodgers are going to be, you know, towards the end of the season. And I think the Phillies will be picking it up. Everybody's going to be playing together at that point. Hopefully no injuries happen, and they're, you know, sitting firm and using that momentum like they did this past season to carry themselves into the playoffs.
Okay, ALDS, I have Guardians over Twins. I think this is a good matchup for the Guardians. They've had a lot of success against the Twins past couple of seasons. I think at this point in the year, I think the Guardians will have brought up a couple of very talented starting pitching prospects that really help pretty much the only like gaping flaw on the team, which is, you know, a fourth and fifth starting pitcher. And once that kind of happens, it's like this begins to be a very complete roster mixed with arguably the best bullpen in baseball. And I think at this point in the season, as the Guardians front office has shown to do in the past years, when they have a really competitive team, you mentioned it earlier, like in free agency, in trades, they are extremely aggressive, signing Edwin Encarnacion to a huge deal, picking up Andrew Miller at the trade deadline from the Yankees, picking up Jay Bruce from the Reds, I don't know, Yasiel Puig 1 year, but Josh Donaldson 1 year. So just a ton of trade acquisitions that they've made. I think they would probably get one or two big hitters at the trade deadline, and then this becomes an absolute bona fide, you know, World Series caliber team. Blue Jays over Mariners. I think that, you know, the Blue Jays present probably a difficult matchup for the Mariners. You know, a good defensive team, a team that has a ton of, you know, really good hitters, and the Blue Jays pull off an upset. Oh, NL. Let's see. Okay. Braves over Mets. Braves have absolutely killed the Mets. It seemed like
the Braves own the Mets
last year. And so I really think that this continues. I think, like you said, Verlander and Scherzer will be absolutely insane come playoff time. But although Scherzer did kind of, you know, ups and downs in the playoffs last year, but I think in the end, the, you know, Braves are just a more complete, talented team, so I'll take the Braves there, and then I'm going to take the Phillies over the Padres, 4-1. Obviously, big believer in the Phillies. I think once they get towards the trade deadline, they'll pick up a couple of, you know, pitchers and become a more complete team.
So my ALDS, I have the Mariners over the Yankees, and this is what I kind of mentioned. Come playoff time, I think that the pressure from the New York media, the New York fans, it becomes too much, and you saw it this past season. They just can't compete, you know, like you would expect a team like that to come playoffs, whether it's, you know, the pressure or they're just straight up choke artists. But the Mariners are going to find a way to carry that momentum from the Twins into this next series. And I think they win it in like five games too, or not five games, in four games. I think they handle the Yankees pretty well. The Guardians beating the Angels. Yeah, the Angels, there was no way I could, like, I couldn't do with the Angels what I did with the Mavs and just kind of like try to dance my way around the fact that they're just not a very good team. They're not a very complete team. Couldn't do that. The Guardians are one of the best teams in baseball, and they're going to probably sweep the Angels if they got this. In the NLDS, I have the Padres over the Mets. I think that the Mets steal the first two. I think they take the first two just because having that pitching is huge. How would that work? If they actually, that might be... Maybe they pitch 2 and 3 then. I don't know. They're going to win the Scherzer Verlander games, but they're going to lose the other three just because it's kind of how the Mets do things, right? And then I got the Phillies over the Braves. I just think that the Phillies are a freaking good team. And like you said, I think they're going to add pitching because it's their one weakness right now. They're going to add it at the deadline, and they're going to be a really solid team.
Okay. I'll make it all and then I'll just head out. But, let's see here. Okay. ALCS, right? And then NLCS. Okay. Yep. Guardians over Blue Jays. I think a lot of these matchups suit the Guardians really well. I think we had a lot of success against the Blue Jays last year. Obviously it's regular season. It's not the exact same thing, but still helps us. And I think, for the NLCS, I have Phillies over Braves, insane lineup. Same pitching, come playoff time, I think I'll have Phillies Guardians World Series. And not biased. I this is really what I thought. When it comes down to each matchup, it's like, who would I take? That's what my gut kind of told me. So That's how it is. And then in the World Series, I have the Phillies over the Guardians. So our magic run falls short.
I feel like you like to do this a lot. You pick your teams to go really far and then just lose just before reaching the
prize possession. And my only thing with that is it's just like, I think literally looking at it from matchup to matchup, I think we would beat the Blue Jays.
No,
I think we would beat the Twins. But once we get to the World Series, it's not enough, and the Phillies are just a more talented team. And we have maybe a couple of really good players in our lineup, but not like four, superstars. Yeah. And that's where it gets difficult. So I think that's probably where our train would stop, and I think we would lose to the Phillies.
I've got the Mariners over the Guardians, unfortunately. And I know we just saw you guys take 3 of 4 against them to start the season. But I think that the Mariners, that was kind of an outlier. I think that, by the end of the season, they're going to be one of the best teams in baseball. And then Phillies over Padres, like you mentioned, the Phillies are just a really, really good team. And I got the Phillies over the Mariners. So we both got the Phillies winning the World Series. But, they're just, like you mentioned, great team. 4 bona fide superstars in that batting order. And that's hard to beat, right? That's why the Dodgers and the Astros have won so many World Series recently.
I forgot to mention Kyle Schwarber as well.
Oh, my God. Schwarber is on that team, too.
Oh, my goodness. Jake Cave, I remember him. Brandon Marsh,
just a really good team. I don't know how they started the season 0-4. I really don't. It doesn't make any sense.
But I've always said this. If you try and break down the MLB like literally any other sport, even the NBA,
doesn't work. Good.
Yep.
Thank you guys so much for watching. Hope you enjoyed. Catch you on the flip. See ya.